Welcome to the Election 2007 podcast interviews. In this podcast series, candidates in the May 2007 polls tell you what they think about the various issues and problems facing the country. No sound bites, just complete answers to pressing questions so you can make an informed choice in May.
Our guest for this podcast is former senator and television journalist Lauren Legarda. Legarda is running for senator under the Genuine Opposition slate.
Welcome to the show, Lauren.
Well, thank you, JV, and it's a unique experience to be here today to do this program with you.
Our first question will be from Lynette Luna, our breaking news editor.
Hi, Lauren.
Hi, Lynette.
After the turmoil of the 2004 elections, what made you decide to get back into the political arena, especially since your protest before the Presidential Electoral Tribunal is still pending?
Well, I must admit that it was traumatic. 2004, I mean. Having been robbed of your victory after having campaigned for 3.5 months and spending quite a sum. When we were campaigning, you're almost sure we were going to win because of the overwhelming support shown by the people in every part of the country, even in areas where we didn't have political leaders. But the rest is history, you know what happened. We did not have the machinery to protect our votes. We were not the proclaimed candidates. But on July 23, 2004, I filed my vice presidential electoral protest. And since then, it has been moving, but very slowly. And it has cost me, just for one province alone, in Lanao del Sur, 12 million pesos. After having lost, in quotation marks, or not having been proclaimed, and spending a huge sum of money, shelling out 12 million is a very, very difficult thing to do. But I did so because my three-year fight for truth, fairness, and justice on the 2004 elections, for me, is a principled fight. It is a fight of conviction. From the beginning, my friends and supporters said, forget it. They will not make you sit as vice president. Forget your fight. I could not do it, Lynette, because I had to pursue it to see what really happened, for me to be at peace with myself and to know what transpired in 2004. And true enough, I saw it with my own eyes. And no less than Attorney Makalintal, the lawyers, the opponent's lawyer, and Chairman Abalos of the COMELEC, and the printer of the COMELEC had admitted that the election returns in Congress of certain municipalities in the province of Lanao del Sur were actually substituted with fake or forged election returns. So what have I proven after 3 years, after 12 million pesos down the drain, after finishing just one province in my protest? I have proven, just through my pilot province of Lanao Sur, that indeed there was fraud in 2004, as proven in the election returns that were substituted and faked, and no less than the opponent had admitted that. And it was admitted in open court. It is in the history of the Supreme Court in the vice presidential electoral protest. With that alone, I believe I have won a moral victory. True, I may not sit as vice president. I never, ever thought I would, because my resources are limited and time is also limited and real politic. Impossible. Why would they make me sit? But it was important for me to be able to wage that principled battle and to prove the fraud of 2004. Now, am I scared now? Yes. I'm traumatized. I'm scared that it could happen, and scared all the more because we don't have the machinery, even the resources, the money to protect 240,000 precincts over the country. You will need 2 billion pesos. Obviously, we don't have that. If we did not have it in a presidential campaign, how could we have it on a senatorial level? But then again, there's the NAMFREL, the PPCRV, the media, the civic groups, our local leaders who hopefully this time will not allow it to happen. But if it happens and we are cheated of victory in May of 07, that's a very scary scenario because it would mean the crumbling of our democratic processes. If, again, the results in May are subverted and the true votes and the true voice of the people are not adhered to, then I fear the future of this country. I'm number one in all surveys. I say that not to be immodest, but as a matter of fact. Ebon, Pulse Asia, SWS. They all say I'm a runaway winner. But why am I working so hard? Why am I campaigning like it was my first time? Because it has to be so overwhelming that even if they cheat me, they can't rob me of victory. Why? Because I'm obsessed with victory? No. Because I just have to prove the point that first, to be able to serve, you have to win. And that you can win without using guns, goons, and gold, just by reaching out to your constituents through media such as this that we're doing now.
What can you say to criticisms that after fighting for the impeachment of deposed President Joseph Estrada, you are now running under the opposition ticket which he has endorsed?
Very good question. Let me clarify. In 2001, I was a senator judge. You will recall that I asked the very important questions which brought out the truth. I've always adhered to the truth. I did not fight for his impeachment because the impeachment happens in the House of Representatives. The impeachment emanates from the House. It was Senator Villar, then House Speaker, who banged the gavel and who impeached President Erap. I did not impeach him. It was a congressman in the lower house. What we did in the Senate was to hear the case of the impeached president so that we would either vote for or against his conviction. As we all know, the prosecutors walked out, there was EDSA DOS, and there was no conviction of the former president. I performed my role as a senator judge. I studied well, being a non-lawyer. I believe that my role in the impeachment was crucial because I was able to bring out the truth, at least part of it, in 2001. But then again, when we look back now, okay, many of us were part of EDSA DOS, but where are everybody now? Everybody have left the administration and have gone to the opposition. Why? Because we are opposed to corruption. We are opposed to government overspending in government of government funds. We are opposed to things that are happening in government which is not aligned with what we believed in 2001. So I am definitely not uncomfortable that I am running with a party endorsed by former President Estrada, because I have performed my role as a senator judge, impartial as I would want to call it, in 2001. And when things didn't go right, with the administration, we helped install into office. And if they did not prove themselves worthy of the mandate of the people, then I believe it was just right of us to move over and to fight against what they're doing.
As you said, you were number one in practically all the surveys. So if elected, or when elected, how will you define your term this time in the Senate?
Okay, I wish I could enumerate all my bills and laws which I authored, hundreds of them, and more than dozens of them enacted into law. But I will mention some. Specifically for the women who are listening to us right now, I'm the co-author and author and sponsor of the Anti-Domestic Violence Act. This is very important for those who are listening to us abroad, because many of our innocent and innocent kababayans in the Visayas, in Mindanao, are lured to go abroad, and they are trafficked, used as sex slaves, forced into bondage, into forced labor, because they don't know any better, because they're in dire need of financial upliftment. And the Anti-Trafficking in Persons Act, which I co-authored and pushed as majority leader, had been enacted into law. And this was, in fact, even lauded by the U.S. government, because trafficking is a syndicate even bigger than drug trafficking. And that's a trafficking in persons, a human trafficking. And that's very, very important that we had a law enacted. Second, the Anti-Domestic Violence Act. Spousal abuse had been a problem in this country. Many of our women had suffered in silence for decades, either because of economic abuse, physical abuse, or even psychological or mental or emotional abuse. Before, when they would complain to the police or to the barangay captain who could knock at their door, they would say, ay, away mag-asawa lang yan. But now, the women have ammunition, and it had to take a woman majority leader, if I would say so myself, to be able to push this important measure. And when I see women crying on TV, case studies, or women have come to me and tell me, we're using your law that you had authored to defend us against abusive live-in partners, boyfriends, or spouses, then I feel good that somehow I've helped uplift the state of our women in our country. That's just two of the pro-women bills that have become laws. One other important law which I authored, which was very important to our Muslim population because we were the only country in Asia with a Muslim population that did not regard the end of Ramadan as a national holiday. And therefore, Eid al-Fitr is now a holiday. And whenever it is Eid al-Fitr, I get texts from all over Mindanao. I say, Inshallah, Mom, because of you, Eid al-Fitr is now a holiday. In fact, my bill had twin holidays. It should have had Eid al-Adha. It was blocked by the Senate then, but I intend to make it a national holiday too. You might think, we Christians might think, oh, what's that? It's just a holiday. But to them, regarding it as a holy day is so important to them. And no less than the Saudi ambassador, the Brunei ambassador, had congratulated me for what I did in 2001. Another very important law which I principally authored and sponsored was the Ecological Solid Waste Management Law. Yung paghihiwalay-hiwalay ng basura, the segregation of garbage at source, recycling, and composting. That's very important for any industrializing third world nation because there's money in garbage. If this policy is implemented in middle-class barangays like in Barangay Blue Ridge and in areas in Navotas and Bulacan and in Barangay Forbes Park, which is upscale, why can't it be done around the country? And therefore, 6 years ago in 2001, the first law signed by then newly installed President GMA into office was my law, the Solid Waste Management Law, which has been again lauded by environmental groups. And I did not do it alone. I did this with the support of people like Dr. Palaypay of the University of the Philippines, of Odette Alcantara, Narda Camacho, Mother Earth Foundation of Hope, all helped me craft this law. Another very important law which I authored, which should be implemented, is a tropical fabric law. Again, it may not hit the headlines of the news in television and print, but it's a very important law because it mandates that each government employee must wear natural or indigenous fiber, meaning piña, Philippine cotton, abaca, etc. Why is it important? Because it does not only bring back pride in culture, in heritage, but it also gives livelihood to people in the grassroots. Dahil pag magtanim ka ng abaca, ng piña, ng banana, you know, immediately you would have a marketing outlet for all of these products because there would be a demand for these kinds of fibers which come from our native grown products. I can read to you many of the other measures which I authored. The Clean Air Act of 1999. But why do we still have smoke belchers in our highways? Ibig sabihin yan, ang LTO, calling on the LTO, help somebody does something about it. In our motorcades, I have a slight cough now because I go out of my vehicle, linalanghap ko, I'm able to sniff all the dirty, polluted air of Metro Manila because the law which I helped author with Senator Honasan in 1999 is not being effectively implemented. And that's a Clean Air Act. And it specifically mandates that the LTO, upon registration of all vehicles, must check the emission testing of all these vehicles and must not register them. But why is it that there are many mobile sources of pollution, buses, jeeps, tricycles, which get registered but do not abide by the laws of the Clean Air Act? Again, another very important law which I authored with the late Senator Ople is a PESO bill, Public Employment Service Office. Why is it important? The biggest problem of our country, millions of our countrymen are unemployed. This law mandates that each mayor must appoint a PESO officer, a Public Employment Service Officer, to match the needs of that place, the town, or the city, with the talents of his constituents. Now, the Anti-Money Laundering Act, we were taken out of the blacklist, no? From the international organizations because of our adherence to the Anti-Money Laundering Act, which I helped push as majority leader and which I co-authored as well. Again, we made very stricter, stringent measures in terms of our drug abuse program through the Comprehensive Dangerous Drugs Act, which I helped author with the late Senator Robert Barbers. Again, livelihood is so important. I saw to it that the barangay is empowered. The Barangay Business Enterprises Act looks at the need of the barangay and mandates again that banks like the Land Bank or the DBP, Development Bank of the Philippines, provides capital, magpapautang sa barangay so that they're given enough capital for their own livelihood. If you're not yet contented with all my bills, I can tell you more. Okay. The 70% of your listeners in the podcasting, I understand, overseas, are overseas Filipinos. And our gift to them was a Dual Citizenship Act, which, of course, was pushed by then-Senate President Franklin Drilon, and the Overseas Absentee Voting Act. Unfortunately, in 2004, not many people yet knew about this, or there was difficulty in its implementation. But hopefully now, through mailing, voting by mail, through information dissemination of the consulates and the embassies, more people can, overseas Filipinos can go to the respective embassies and vote. And I'd like to mention that I was part of the team that crafted this law. We even went to New York and did consultation with our overseas kababayans there. Of course, I mentioned the Citizenship Retention and Reacquisition Act, and this allows all natural-born Filipinos to reacquire their Philippine citizenship. You know, many of the Filipinos who go abroad, they may be U.S. citizens, iba naging British citizens na, etc. But their heart still belongs to the Philippines. They want to come back. They want to have a stake in the running of the affairs of state. They want to come back and retire here. And with this Citizenship Retention and Reacquisition Act, they're able to do this and even able to own property. I can even tell you other measures which I did, which are now Republic Acts. For the people of Batanes, maybe those listening to us have relatives in Batanes, I made Batanes a protected area. The Ivatans are a beautiful people. Batanes, I think, is we're very proud of the culture of the Ivatans, and that must be protected. The Early Childhood Care and Development Act was principally sponsored by Senator Oreta. You know, I have to give credit where credit is due. But as Majority Leader, I pushed this, and I also co-authored this measure with her. For the people from Pangasinan who are listening, I co-authored the charter of the city of Alaminos, Pangasinan. I hope I'll be going there this week. I hope the people of Alaminos remember this. In fact, they had made me an adopted daughter of the city of Pangasinan. The people of Muntinlupa, I was just there the other day. No wonder they received me so warmly. I'm also the author of the Muntinlupa City Charter Day. And the Negros State College of Agriculture. The creation of this college is so important because, as we know, Panay in Region 6, specifically Negros, is an agricultural area. And we know that the sugar planters need all the support. And therefore, we were part of the creation of this Republic Act 9141. The latest state university, we also had helped in RA 9158. The Film Development Council, the new Philippine Nursing Act, which helps our nurses and gives them more benefits. I also co-authored and co-sponsored that measure. And we also had some additional privileges for Balikbayans who are coming home by allowing them a bigger allowance for purchases from the duty-free allocation to them. And in fact, the Cebu International School, giving them the authority to run as an international school, I also authored that, I think, yes, I principally authored that measure. And something very important is a Magna Carta for the working child. There have been many child minors, child laborers in factories who have been abused and deprived of their rights. But because of this Magna Carta for the working child, their rights are protected in line with the United Nations requirements for the protection of the child. You want some more?
Thank you very much. I think we are more than enlightened about
yes. Thank you. And I will do more. Yes. You know, I did this only in 6 years. And yeah. This is only legislation, Lynette. I did not limit myself to the four walls of the Senate. What I did was enact bills into laws which are needed by various sectors. As you can see, it's multi-sectoral, multi-dimensional. For the environment, for women, from Pangasinan to Cebu to Leyte. For the overseas Filipinos, for the Muslim Filipinos. Apart from that, what I did was also focus on projects because I'm a very impatient person. I want results to be done yesterday. And I realize that sometimes legislation takes quite a while. So what I did was I embarked on programs that did not require legislation. That is the reason why I have a scholarship program under my Libro ni Loren Foundation, which started with the former child miners, yung mga batang minero, from Paracale, Camarines Norte. I've graduated 20 child miners, and it has expanded now to include Itas of Zamboales with the Rotary Club of Makati, as well as 24 children from Barangay Batulao with the Don Bosco brothers in Nasugbu, Batangas. So that's under the Libro ni Loren Foundation. At sa awa naman ng Diyos, nakaraos ako. Even if for the past 3 years, I was out of office and my resources were scraping bottom with my electoral protest, I was able, through the help of friends, to continue the scholarship of these children, and they did not stop schooling. Apart from that, we have the Luntian Pilipinas, where we plant trees in every conceivable place. In a span of 8 years, we were able to plant 8 million trees. And you can see some of that in the North and South Expressway. In every exit you see in the South, for example, let Imam Plasan across Brent School, the big acacia trees there were planted in 1998. If you will recall, in 97, 98, these were all empty areas full of garbage. What we did, with no government resources, underline, no government resources, through my initiative and the help of friends and sponsors and donors, we were able to plant trees and make them grow. Unfortunately, Milenio had uprooted half at least of these trees in the South Expressway, but we're continuing to replant now.
Thank you very much, Lauren, and good luck in your campaign.
Thank you, Lynette.
J.B. Rufino, the editor-in-chief of Inquirer.net. Just have a bit of a follow-up to that. It certainly seems an impressive record. So how are you going to top that when you're elected? How are you going to...
How am I going to top that?
Done everything
that? No, there's still a lot to be done. You know, J.B., I've mentioned about women's rights. I've mentioned about overseas workers' rights. I've mentioned about the environment. But this time, I'd like to go back to basics. Why is it that despite the laws we've enacted, people are still poor? Why are millions of Filipino families living on 32 pesos a day? Why are we importing rice? Why are we importing toyo and patis? Definitely, there's a need to improve food production. There's a need to enact laws that will put food on the table for millions of Filipino families. So my focus this time is to put food on the table. Poverty alleviation, focusing on eradicating or eliminating or even reducing hunger. Second is to improve the quality of education. There's a need for teacher training and retraining. Whatever our teachers know is what's imparted to our public school students. But if we don't upgrade their salaries and don't upgrade the skills that we teach them, then our quality of education would definitely suffer. So I would have to find a way how to improve teacher retraining programs. And third, there's a need for a comprehensive healthcare agenda. In every place I visit around the country, people always come to me and they need money to buy medicine, or local officials asking for this kind of equipment for public hospitals. There's definitely a need for that. And it would take resources, I know. But it would be important to have a comprehensive healthcare agenda, which a group of consultants are doing for me now.
But you yourself said that more often than not, the problem lies in the implementation.
Implementation, yes.
We ever thought perhaps that you would like to be on the executive side of things?
In due time. Yes. In the meantime, the election is for the senatorial position, so I will aspire for that once again. And based on surveys, it looks like the people want me to serve in the Senate. In the meantime, I had run for an executive position in 2004. Unfortunately, the votes were not counted adequately. But it would be nice in the future, if God wills it, if the people will help me, for me to see the laws that I authored and sponsored will be implemented in the executive position.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ma'am, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Alex.
I have only a few questions. Right now, ma'am, one of the biggest industries right now is the call center industry. But right now, most graduates, even from top schools, end up working as call center agents. Do you think this is a problem? And would you promote entrepreneurship or support the ongoing call for more workers in call centers?
I think it's good to support the creation of more call centers. It has really revolutionized our generation now. While it's difficult for call center workers now because of the 24-hour schedule and it has changed lifestyles, still, it's an addition to the workforce. And it's also important that we have it here because we're proficient in English. We're a disciplined lot, as long as there's a system to it. While the entrepreneurship is important, of course, entrepreneurship should be encouraged. In fact, skills training should be encouraged for those who want to work right away. Maybe more support for TESDA, the Technical Education Skills Development Authority, should also be promoted. And likewise, the creation of more call centers should be encouraged because it provides jobs to the many young ones in our country.
My next question, ma'am. Would you look into further increasing taxes to improve financial and economic stability in the Philippines?
I think this Congress had done that already with the passing of the EVAT. That's painful enough, but it has done good fiscal management for our country. So I don't, and I'm not an expert in taxes. Maybe what they should do is just collect the right taxes, whether it's realty taxes or income taxes, or implement the EVAT law properly. I think that's sufficient because salaries aren't increasing and taxes are imposed. So it's difficult enough for our people, for all of us.
For my last question, ma'am, in the spirit of transparency, how much in personal income tax did you pay in the past 6 years?
Oh, I don't have the figures right now, but definitely because in the past 3 years, my only income was from television, when I was hosting a TV show, and it's automatically deducted in talent fees when you're a talent. And then apart from that, of course, when I have income properties, you pay income tax on the rental properties, which are very, very small anyway. So I am very, very careful about that. I pay the right taxes and I make sure that my accountant does so. Yes. Thank you.
I would just like to ask, for the record, ma'am, how much did you spend in the last elections that you ran in?
In 1998, when I first ran for senator, I spent around, I think, if I remember right, 12 million. And there was no political ads. When I ran for vice president, I think I spent around from 70 to 80 million pesos, which are all donated amounts. And this included the political ads as well.
For this year, ma'am?
For this year, oh, I don't have a projection yet because I'm still fundraising. But it would be similar, I guess, to the vice presidential, but maybe less because there are many people campaigning now. So a lot of people are fundraising. So for those listening and overseas Filipinos who'd want to donate, is it illegal to do this? they're welcome to donate. It's really very expensive. And that's what I dislike most about politics, the overspending and the tiresome campaigning and the promise here, promise that. I just want to do the work. As you can see, I'm just a worker. I just want to create laws. I just want to legislate for different sectors. But what I don't like is the overspending because for me, it's unnecessary. People should just have a fixed amount and use this certain medium, maybe podcasting, and then let the people decide. But really have a cap on spending. It's too much. I will not name the candidates, but in 2004, there were a few candidates who had all the money in the world and spent so much. And now it is obvious those who have the most posters and the most political ads. But of course, you cannot complain because it's allowed by law. But there's really a need to put a cap on campaign spending.
Regarding, ma'am, those giving donations for your campaign, don't you think you would be beholden to these people in the end?
It's been my track record since 1998 that those helping me, whether personal friends or totally unknown to me, but whose background I check when they donate, have not asked me for favors other than maybe autographing a calendar or a picture for their daughter or something. No, it's really amazing because if you will look at my track record, I have never involved myself in any government deal. I've never done anything against my will. So I have never done any favor for any contributor that is bad for the country. For example, one of my donors or friends or contributors or sponsors would be amenable or would benefit from a law that I authored, then that's good. That means it's good for the people as well. But I would never do anything against my will or against the benefit of many of the majority of our countrymen.
Another topic. Since a politician is a public figure and everybody knows that you've been married, or you've been with Governor Leviste, and he has now and he's now facing murder charges. Do you think this is hurting your senatorial bid?
Not really. I don't think so, because we've been estranged for many years now, and that tragedy happened a few months ago after we have been estranged and have not had contact for 3-4 years already. I'll say what I said before. It's truly unfortunate. It's a tragedy for both parties. And I even went to the wake of the family and condoled with the family, who are my good friends. It's really a tragedy, and I hope and I pray that justice will be served. And I think that surveys, even after the incident, would show that it's not affected me, because it is obvious I have nothing to do with that issue.
Good afternoon, ma'am. I'm Tetch Torres, justice reporter for Enquirer.net.
Tetch, yes. Hi.
What do you see as the country's three most pressing problems, and what solutions can you propose?
First is poverty. Along with poverty comes joblessness. Second is a need for adequate health care. And third, there are a lot, but you want to limit it to three, is the quality of our educational system. What do I propose for the three? I've mentioned it earlier, but maybe I should mention them again. For poverty alleviation, we need to get into more food production programs for our government and provide support for our agricultural sector. Second, for the improvement of our educational sector, there's a need. What's the backlog in education? 40,000 school buildings, the hiring of tens of thousands of teachers, and the retraining of these teachers, that would entail resources. And therefore, we need to focus on that, and it is mandated in the Constitution that education must get the priority in our budget allocation. And the need for health care. Children and women are dying every day from diseases which they should not die from. And that is because there are no adequate equipment in hospitals, maybe not even the presence of doctors and nurses in the far-flung barangays. And there is a need, as I said, for a comprehensive healthcare agenda, which I am presently crafting along with some consultants, which I will propose in the next few weeks. But that does not mean that there are no other problems in other sectors. There's a need to improve our environment. No less than the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, had come out with a study from the Yale Center for Environmental Policy that showed that the Philippines ranks 127 in the list of over 150. We're in the bottom rung of in terms of environmental sustainability. And we have seen how environmental laws are violated, how our rich resources are being depleted by the lack of awareness of environmental measures existing, or simply our apathy as a people. So environmental concerns are very important. It is a gut issue. If you've seen Inconvenient Truth, it will happen in every part of the world. And therefore, the environment, the need to protect us from the ravages of nature should be made a basic issue even from prep, from grade school. The ecological time bomb is clicking. We should make sure that we're aware of it and that we should do something about it.
Do you agree that the only answer to the country's problems is charter change?
The proponents of charter change say it is the answer to many of our problems. I say, and I agree with the bishops, that it's a change in ourselves. It is a change in the character of our people, all of us, not just the president or the incumbent leaders, but all of us, including the members of the opposition. Because you change the form of government. Will this put food on the table? Will this bring home the overseas workers because they have jobs in the country? Will this build more hospitals? Maybe it would break the gridlock between the two houses of Congress, but if we would have the same quality of legislators, then I don't think it would provide the solution. It may be part of the solution. I'm not against a total ban on charter change. I think circumstances change and times change, and there's a need to revisit the Constitution, but not to suit personal interest, not to suit personal agenda, at wag mamadaliin. I mean, we should study it because it's it's like moving residence. It's like moving and migrating to another country. It's a new form altogether. But let's not make the people believe that with a change in the form of government, suddenly they would wake up one morning and all their problems will be solved. Otherwise, we will have a very angry population staring us in the face the next morning.
On another issue, will you push for a review of the Visiting Forces Agreement?
I would like to say that the five of us who voted against it in 1999 were vindicated. 8 years after, I voted against it and I said in my vote then, I vote against it because it is a vote for the youth of our country. It is a vote for the women of our country. Was I not right? And therefore, I believe it must be reviewed.
So you think what is more important is national sovereignty over our international commitments?
No, I think there could be a balance between diplomacy, keeping our friendship with our superpower neighbors and friends, at the same time assuring us of our sovereignty and that our rights are protected.
Thank you, ma'am.
Yes, thank you.
Good morning, I'm Veronica Uy. I'm a reporter for Inquirer.net. Every day, like you said earlier, almost 3,000 Filipinos leave the country. Is this type of migration something you would encourage, and what type of legislation would you propose to respond to this problem?
We can look at it both ways. We can look at it as a problem because it causes some issues in terms of family and the social aspect of it all, but it can also be perceived or looked at as a blessing because they bring in 12 billion a year, which keeps our economy afloat. And I don't think that legislation can cure this problem if it can be seen as a problem at all. It is a problem of having the resources within our country to provide the employment needed and to be able to attract these overseas Filipinos to come home, to return home and spend their time here. Legislation is not needed. It is really keeping the jobs here, keeping Filipinos here by providing attractive package and benefits for many of them. It is not, you cannot blame the nurses who go abroad, who receive a starting salary of $3,000 to $5,000 a month compared to if they stay here and earn 10,000 to 15,000 pesos a month. You cannot blame them. And therefore, while we would rather that our kababayan stay home and stay with their families, they definitely have given a lot to our economy and have sacrificed a lot. So I would not want to solve that so-called problem because they have been the source of our economic upliftment.
You mentioned earlier that campaigning now has become very expensive. Is there a way, is there a legislation that you might propose to bring this down? Would you prefer subsidy from the government on campaigning?
It would be ideal to have subsidy from government, but that's unrealistic because we know that the government has very limited resources. And there should just be a cap on spending, which actually there is, but it's been blatantly violated by candidates who have the money. And therefore, I think the close monitoring of the COMELEC is important, and we should maybe limit really the cap on spending. Maybe limit the airtime. I'm not saying to put back the political ad ban because the media would get mad at me. And I came from media myself. But really to limit the airtime and to subsidize maybe the cost of airtime. Because right now it's 30% off the rate card, which is still very expensive. 200,000 pesos for a 30-second commercial. That's a hefty sum. And what happens is the candidates who have the resources, the billionaires, are the ones who are seen often on TV. But somehow, the viewers and the constituents, the voters, actually know and realize who has a track record, who just has the money. What's more important, I believe, is having the votes counted correctly and actually counting and canvassing the right votes and not allowing the true votes to be subverted once again. Vote protection is the issue now.
So there's no legislation there?
Legislation was recently passed in the automation law. Well, automation is not being implemented, but parts of the law had provided certain measures against fraud, meaning the increase of the copies of election returns so that the local media can have a copy. I think that's an anti-fraud measure. Again, will this be implemented? That's the big question. Thank you.
Okay, I'm Erwin Oliver from the technology section, and I also cover Comelec. Ma'am, will you push for issues that, for religious reasons, are being opposed by Catholic Church?
Such as
laws on reproductive health, condom use to prevent HIV/AIDS infection.
I think we should not say an outright no to these proposed measures, but we must also study them completely, exhaustively. I'm a Catholic, and I am totally against any form of abortion. But I think that reproductive health should be looked into. The women should be given a right to choose what form of contraception are available to them, and whatever is in line with their personal and religious beliefs, they should have a right to decide for themselves.
What's your agenda for street children and abused children?
In the previous Senate, I had filed a bill for the creation of more centers to house street children, but this was not prioritized. It was not enacted into law. Maybe we could craft other measures for street children. This is actually, it would not entail legislation. This is a job of the DSWD, the Social Welfare and Development Department, that should house the street children and should have centers to deal with abused children as well. Actually, there's no need for legislation. There's just a need for funding and for know-how on how to psychologically deal with these children who are out in the streets.
Do you believe that the display of government officials' names on public projects should be made a crime or prohibited?
Maybe not made a crime, but really the use of government resources anyway for the construction of highways and roads with their names and even photos, including that of the highest office in the land. I mean, because it does not come from their personal pockets anyway, should just say it's a road repair project benefiting the people of 123, this place. But it's not necessary. Maybe it should be prohibited, but not really made into a crime.
Are you in favor of passing laws for gay and lesbian rights, and why or why not?
I think every individual has a right, whether you're gay or not. And it would depend on the laws that will be enacted, that have to be studied as well. But I am not totally against the possibility of studying laws that would give gay rights, that would recognize gay rights.
How will you conduct investigations in aid of legislation? Aren't they more often than not used as means of grandstanding?
The role of Congress, or of the Senate for that matter, is not only to legislate. We would be abdicating our role if we only said we were here to legislate or to craft laws, but not to investigate. That is the reason why there are two houses in Congress, as well the Senate and the lower house. And that's why there are three branches of government, because the Senate is supposed to be a body that would balance this all. So it's important that we know our role, but that we don't abuse it. Mm-hmm. That we don't become fault finders and utilize all the airtime and resources and time meant for legislation into investigation. But which we must not also abdicate this role. It's very important that we do so.
Okay, ma'am. On a lighter note, ma'am, you mentioned you're a child of the 70s. So how do you intend to take advantage of today's technology in your campaign?
Well, I'm learning from you guys. I'm learning from my son, who is a techie. And that's it. I have my own iPod, and my son uploaded The Carpenters, which are my favorite songs, and Simon Garfunkel. I don't think you know Kalapana. You weren't born yet. America, Chicago. I can name the songs. That was a Christmas gift to me. When we went abroad for the short holidays, I had my iPod, and it really changed my mood. I love it. And while I was in the airport, nobody could talk to me. I was going to bring it on a campaign, except that my son said it might be politically incorrect because the mayors might be talking to me. I just might be nodding because I liked the song, and I might not hear what they're saying. So I left it at home. So I'm not tempted to use the iPod, but it really relaxes me. I love it. Mm-hmm. So while I use the high tech of the of today, it still maintains the songs of the 70s. And even my theme song in my television ad is an 80s, I think, song of Ryan Kayabyab, but the lyrics were changed to be adapted to my campaign.
mentioned earlier that you're going to relaunch your website. Apart from the website, are you going to use texting and other methods?
I've used texting in 2004. I used texting now, I think, for Valentine's messages. I did texting. I, in fact, had a website even while I was in the Senate from 1998. Mm-hmm. And except that there was a problem. Somebody used my domain name, is that correct? Mm-hmm. And somebody even came to my office in 98 or 99 selling me my domain name for such a huge amount. I think, what is it, a syndicate doing that?
A cyber squad.
Yes. And they were asking for such a big amount, I ignored them. So I don't know how can this be, what remedies can be done about this. And in fact, even in my email address, I could not use my name. LaurenLegarde@yahoo.com is taken. Now, how
you
have
you.
Yeah, you have to tell me how to go about this, because even in my email address, so I had to use iPlantTrees. Mm-hmm. i_plant_trees@yahoo.com or lauren_b_legarde. I had to put my middle name because Lauren Legarde is taken. So it angers me. So what do we, how do you investigate who, there's no Lauren Legarde at all, and nobody so I don't know who registers his or her name or uses that email address.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on the poll automation, considering what happened to you in the last elections?
This must be funded. It must be utilized so that a country as populous as the Philippines, just like in India, imagine they have a bigger population, but they have the results of the elections in 24 hours so that fraud could not be utilized by the evildoers. But then again, it takes money, and it would entail know-how to use it. You may have the technology, but if people don't know how to use it, cheating might be done in an automated manner as well. So there must be coordination, not just funding of the whole system, but also know-how and training. So definitely for May 2007, this can't be done.
Would throwing money at the problem solve the cheatings in a manual election system?
Well, money will take you a long, long way. For those who have the resources and for those who are corrupt, then votes can be bought, and Canvas sheets and COC, certificates of canvas, can be changed, and the results can be changed altogether. And it's really a pity that we candidates who never made money in government will be deprived of our true votes, of the true votes of the people, if then again those who are moneyed and powerful and have the machinery will cheat us of our rightful place.
Mm-hmm. This was asked earlier, but I just want to clarify, ma'am. What are your plans to develop the high-tech industry and the science industry?
Oh, okay. I don't think it would take legislation. The industry is developing on its own. Mm-hmm. I think the support it can get from government is to be less interventionist and just provide the good business environment for investors to come in and invest in that industry more. Of course, the support, moral support, statements from industry leaders and from politicians is equally important. I'm not sure if there's any piece of legislation needed to further support the industry. But I think the best support would be to give a good business environment.
Mm-hmm. What about the science industry?
Oh, science is very important. I think we should upgrade our skills in science and math, and especially in public schools, because I know that in big schools and universities and even in international schools, science and math are given importance. There's a need, again, for teachers who are the source of information of our students to be trained and retrained and updated with skills pertaining to science and math for them to be able to transmit this to their students.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Good morning, Lauren. I'm Joey Alarilla. I edit our Inquire.net video channel and also our Hack & Slash gaming site. I don't know if you play games, but maybe I'll ask you later.
No, my son does. I'm sorry I don't play video games, but he does. And that's my problem. He plays too much games that he stays up very late or early in the morning because he plays games and chats and He's such a computer whiz.
But at least you get to bond over games, over video games. Does he teach you some of the games?
I wish I could. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if it's right to say this. It has been a hindrance to bonding because sometimes when the children play games, it's noisy and they're so concentrated on the gaming. And a lot of games are violent. Mm-hmm. The M games or the T games. I didn't realize that there were M games for those 18 and above. And I was purchasing games which were M games for my 13-year-old son. I cannot take it back now because I bought it for him. Ignorant mother. So that's my complaint. Mm. While I believe in the importance of computers, what it has done, revolutionized our lifestyle, still, it has its downside. Yes. Let's be realistic about it. And also, we should be careful about who our children chat with on the internet, the websites that they may visit, and what do you call those who he's just gaming and somebody comes in, the pop-ups. That just interfere in the gaming of my son. So I wish they could find ways and means first to censor the internet for minors and to prevent pop-ups in children's computers. So these are concerns of a mother like me.
Yes.
And the computers deprived me bonding time with my son. But it has also made him a more skilled and intelligent person. So it's both good and bad.
As a former broadcast journalist, how do you feel about technologies like, for example, this podcast right now? How are they changing the face of journalism and the way our Filipino people get access to information, for example, the real issues in the campaign?
Well, it has made it more interesting, more varied, and the response and the access more instantaneous. Mm-hmm. So that's good. It has also made it maybe more affordable. And now that I know about this podcasting, I'll probably do it more often and utilize it and squeeze every aspect of it. It's interesting. Whereas before, we would only campaign, you know, handshakes, go to rallies and use loudspeakers to talk about our programs and put our jingles on these trompas or balakataks, no? Mm-hmm. With jeeps going around. And then, of course, there are political ads and traditional radio jingles. And now we have podcasting, which reaches in your Inquirer.net at least 4 million listeners right away. So it is a very interesting mode of communication.
You mentioned the global reach. One of the things about this is that, you know, even Filipinos in other countries can listen to you right now. I mean, when we have this uploaded. So do you feel that in this election, the absentee voters will also have will play a crucial role?
Yes, I hope that this time the absentee voters who provide the backbone of our economy play an important role. In 2004, there was hardly any dent because there was hardly any vote. A few hundreds of thousands, I think. But since there are millions of Filipinos abroad, I hope that they participate in our democratic process this time and that the votes will not be changed, will be counted.
You mentioned looking into podcasting. Are you also considering starting your own blog or, you know, maybe using your I don't know, do you have a Friendster account?
Well, teach me how. You're talking to a child of the 70s, remember? So my son has all of that. In fact, my sons have their own blog, etc. Maybe I should.
Give a blog, which is Age of Aquarius kind of.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. Tamsi, can you hear? Yeah, I have my assistant now. My MRO here, and I hope, but unfortunately she's my assumption classmate, so she's also my age, that's 47, so I don't know if she's a low tech like me, but yes, I'd like to do that. Yes.
Also, one of the things about, you know, alternative media like this, do you feel that the opposition has been getting equal coverage from, you know, traditional media? Because we know, you know, especially since you come from a broadcast background.
I think so far so good. Like today we're in the front page of all newspapers, including the Inquirer. And we're shown in the TV news every day. I think there's an effort to really provide equal airtime. It's not really between the admin and the opposition. It's really those who have money and those who don't. Whether you're in the administration or the opposition, that makes a difference. So I'm glad there are media or mediums such as the podcasting so that those who are not very moneyed like myself, but who have something to say to our constituents can have the access and tell them about what I offer the Filipino people.
Okay, as a final question, aside from your own campaign slogan or campaign jingle, which one do you like most from another senatorial candidate and which one do you like least? Of course, you're free not to answer the last question.
Yes. I can't answer it because I haven't listened to the radio or watched television. I have not even seen my television commercial on TV. I only approved it after it was produced. But I have not seen or heard anything because I only get to read the papers in the morning, just the front page, and then I run off. So I'll make an effort. But my staff have different comments from different candidates, which I will not ventilate, lest I be accused of being partisan. But I like my commercial very, very much. And that was produced by Regal Films, Mother Lily, directed by Mark Reyes. No, really, honestly, because it was Ryan Cayabyab. I've always liked Ryan Cayabyab. In fact, maybe they should have a CD and make them listen to my 30-seconder? Because I love the song ever since, Ikaw ang tunay na ligaya, etc. It's an 80s song, but we reworded it, new lyrics, and they did the visuals. What sets my commercial apart from the others is that it's not contrived. These were actual accomplishments in my life. When I was with the Aitas of Zambales, when I was wading through the mud in Infanta Quezon during the big storm of December 2004, when I was climbing the mountains of Mansalay Oriental Mindoro, rescuing Major Noel Buan with the bishops and with Ka Roger Rosal, when I went to Ginsaugon in Southern Leyte and gave away food. I even went there ahead of the administration officials. When I was planting trees in different parts of the country, these are actual video from my past experiences and not contrived studio shots on a campaign. And if you will see, I did not promise anything. All I show is what I have done so they can imagine what else I could do.
Thank you very much, Lauren.
And if I may say, sorry, Pahabol, I have another commercial coming out because it's a series of three. I have another commercial coming out which shows the Pulse Asia survey, which showed me as the most trusted Filipino. This is different from the senatorial preferences of being number one. This is really important to me, more than being on top of the senatorial surveys, because all existing government officials were surveyed. Former presidents, present president, vice president, Senate president, Speaker of the House, etc. Even George Bush was put there, and what the Filipinos think. And a non-incumbent former senator has topped the list. Therefore, I am truly humbled by the fact that I am voted as the most trusted Filipino today, and with it comes the immense responsibility to live up to the high expectations of people.
Thank you very much, Lauren.
Thank you once again, and sorry if I've been too talkative, but I just wanted to make do and make the most out of this 1 hour podcasting. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Election 2007 podcast of Inquirer.net. No part of this podcast may be reproduced without the written consent of Inquirer.net. For more information, comments, or suggestions, you can email us at election2007podcast@inquirer.net. That's ELEKSYON2007podcast@inquirer.net. Produced by Creative Voices Productions. All rights reserved, 2007.